welcome to the Green 19 podcast. I'm Dominic Yates. I'm joined by Ryan Wood. Over the last week or so, we've been covering OTAs for the Green Bay Packers. So let's have another check-in and just kind of run through some things. So we've had the chance to hear from Micah Parsons, Jordan Love, and we talked to a lot of other guys in the locker room as well. So I figured this would be a good time to just kind of run through some of those comments, observations from OTAs as well, even though, yeah, it's helmet season, conditioning out on the field, classroom sessions, but there's always them little nuggets or tidbits that you see out there. And oh yeah, kicker. No.
You'll notice you love it? That I didn't say a word during Mr. Dominique's intro here because this is our second take. I got in trouble. I got reprimanded for speaking during the intro. Was that better, Dom?
That was better.
Okay.
That was better. I'm sure
less is more. But for
I'm sure all the viewers right now are saying thank you because Ryan always cuts you off. He never lets you finish your train of thought.
No. I have a real problem called I like to talk.
That's so true.
So I'm giving myself my flowers while the rare time that I didn't. But it's been an eventful week. You know, I was telling our boss Robert Zizzo after yesterday, and they had two open locker rooms this week because they of course closed the open locker room last week following the Josh Jacobs arrest. And it was a team that was trying to get its cards in line, right? Like, oh boy, didn't see that coming. Let's figure this out and then proceed. I was telling our editor, that's an OTA locker room. And he's like, what does that mean? I'm like, well, OTA locker rooms are great because everyone's in there because it's been four, five, I don't know how many months since they've been in there and they've had media around and they forget, oh, we don't like doing this. They have that they're fresh. And then by, you know, there's the OTA locker room, there's the late December Friday locker room when it's a ghost town.
Yeah.
It looks very different than an OTA locker room. Yeah, this has been a very eventful week. We got a lot of updates. The first one, Josh Jacobs is back with the team.
Right.
He is practicing after being released from Brown County Jail without charges. There is still a request for further investigation and a potential decision down the line on whether or not to press charges. But Matt LaFleur said that during this time, he is business as usual. He's practicing, he's taking team reps. They're preparing for a season. And the Packers sure hope it continues to go that way. They don't know. But until they have reason otherwise, they're going to continue to prepare for the 2026 season. That's most significant. But Dominique,
yeah, that's like the big thing, man.
Getting more intel from Micah Parsons was also very significant today.
And I want to jump into that really because when you think about his process and everything he went through from that game in Denver to where he's at now, it's been very fascinating to kind of see his offseason because he's been busy, he's been traveling, he's been going through that recovery. So it was just interesting to hear his comments because he got back into Green Bay, I believe, earlier this week or so. So when you were able to, you know, hear him and talk away, you know, what were some of the things that jumped out? But really it starts with that surgery and that timeline. That's what everyone's going to be wondering
too. What you just said, though, he tore his ACL in Denver. The date of that game is December 14th. Very easy for me to remember. It's my father's birthday, so there you go. That date is irrelevant. I mean, outside of happy birthday, Dad, and Micah Parsons tore his ACL, other than that, it's irrelevant. December 29th is the significant date. That is the date of Micah Parsons' surgery. That is day one. That is when the timeline on recovery starts. And Micah Parsons said it's a pretty strong nine-month rule of non-football. And I asked him later, clarified, like, what is that not practicing? Is that not playing? He said non-football.
Yeah.
And non-football is not practicing.
Yeah.
Right? Non-football means you're not doing football activity for 9 months. September 29th then becomes the next important date. That is 9 months post-op. And so there's non-football until then. What does that mean? Well, Matt LaFleur's already said he's likely to open the season, the open training camp on PUP.
Correct.
That sure sounds like he's probably opening the season on PUP. If you open the season on PUP, then you're going to miss at least the first four games. That's a minimum. It can be five. It can be six. Those five and six are awfully interesting, aren't they? Because week five is the Chicago Bears. And
then after that?
Dallas Cowboys, a little homecoming reunion, both at Lambeau Field. I'm not going to say there's no way that Micah Parsons plays those games, because I'm not going to put anything past someone like that, the ultra competitor, someone who is obviously supremely genetically gifted. Every torn ACL, and in Micah Parsons' case, also cleaning up a meniscus. Mm-hmm. This is different than the Tucker Kraft injury, which was an isolated ACL. Mm-hmm. Micah Parsons said that he also cleaned up his meniscus. Anyone like that, you don't put anything past. But I want to say it's very unlikely he plays those games. If he does, we're talking a very limited pitch count of snaps, because he won't have had any football until September 29th.
Yes.
So, more and more, this seems to me to be something of a Christian Watson timeline from last year. And it was very similar. Christian Watson was the regular season finale, so 2 weeks later, and he was, what was that Steelers game, like the very end of October. Mm-hmm. So the middle October is the very earliest, I think, that you could expect him to see. Now, with that said, as they get closer to that date, it's going to be more defined on how he's feeling late September, early October. Is it good? Does he need more time? Micah Parsons made it very clear, Dominique, the goal is not to get back for a week 5 or week 6 game. Well, the goal was longevity.
That was going to be the most fascinating part for me in listening to Parsons' comments, because when we've talked to him over the year he's been here, he's Mr. Competitor. There's no one better, maybe outside of Myles Garrett, but he's Mr.
Ain't wrong.
Yeah, no, I agree.
Ain't wrong.
But usually when you hear Micah in a presser, it's like, oh, no, yeah, I'm going to be there week 1. I'm ready. If I can go on the field, I can't. You didn't hear that from him. He's pretty much like, no, I'm thinking long term. I'm not just worried about a week 5 or even a week 6 against Dallas as a competitor. Would he like to be on the field? But that was something that stood out to me so much with Parsons, is his mindset of, man, I'm not worried about right now. I'm not worried about the first couple of weeks of the season. I'm worried about the playoffs when they need him down that home stretch, because you saw last year when they didn't have Micah Parsons on the field, including Wyatt Kraft as well, they were not just the same team. So it was fascinating to hear him have that mindset, thinking big picture. But he's very transparent. We've talked so much about how he is in those pressers, and I do want to roll this soundbite where he just talked about the fact that he hasn't accepted his situation right now.
I would definitely say it is hard for me to accept. Not only is it hard to accept that, you know, I'm going to miss more time than, you know, what I want, but obviously it's hard to accept the injury. Like that, it constantly replays in my brain, constantly thinking about how can I not do it. Like, you don't even know how much time I spend on ChatGPT about my injury and how to, like I just can't accept, like, where I'm at. Like, I'm like, man, how do I keep progressing and progressing? Like, and it's just nonstop. So that's a very good question. It is, I haven't accepted it yet, but I work hard as hell every day trying to make sure that I will be better when it comes out of this.
Have you ever used ChatGPT?
All the time.
Do you?
When Micah Parsons said that, he was speaking straight to my soul. it's good on Micah Parsons for finding a good use of AI. I have also recently had my eyes uncovered to any specific questions, and I'll leave those, you know, personal. But yeah, they're good for figuring things out that I don't know.
Yeah, so as soon as I heard that too, it was very good. But I mean, again, that's very transparent. Like, this is a guy that, like, he hasn't gone through anything like this and then the situation. So, you know, we'll see what it looks like when he gets on the field. But you can only imagine what it's going to be like, especially if he's back at a game in Lambeau, and what that reaction is going to be. But just the other thing and the other tidbit was when he said he's not really in the playbook right now. It's all about the recovery. That was one small thing that I don't want to say surprised me, but it was interesting to hear him kind of go about it like, no, I'll talk to DeMarcus Covington, but it's all recovery. I'm not really thinking about football. Kind of goes back to that, I guess, strict policy of no football, that they really have that mindset.
Yeah, I noticed that too. Right now, his focus is on getting healthy, getting the knee good, and he has morning rehab, so he's not in the morning meetings. Then he'll go back out to the practice field in the afternoon, and he'll stand next to DeMarcus Covington. He says kind of like a walkthrough look for him. Why this is important, obviously, is because they're transitioning to a new defense coordinator, Jonathan Gannon. They're transitioning to a 3-4 defense. Micah Parsons said that for him in the 3-4 defense, he's gung-ho about it. He thinks it's sky's the limit. Of course, you could say, like, right now, play any scheme and you're playing, and Micah Parsons is going to be happy about that. Like, that's where his mind is. He doesn't, you can play on Pluto right now, yeah. And he's like, okay, it's football. I'm there.
Yeah.
But yeah, he's not a guy you have to worry about there. Just get the knee healthy, mm-hmm. right? Get the knee healthy. And something that Micah Parsons also added as far as the 3-4 goes is he feels like it will keep protections more honest on who's rushing from where, which he likes. Of course, Micah Parsons is a guy that can rush from anywhere at any time. Usually on third downs, he stands up as a linebacker, and you're going to see some of that, I'm sure. And then he's rushing mostly from the edge, but either edge, right or left. He's not a guy you have to worry about. You just so long as he's Micah Parsons, and that's what the focus is right now, getting him back to that level.
Yes, and that's one thing that when he talked about just the state of the defense, again, it's never a good time or an ideal time to have an injury. Let's get that clear. But for the situation like a Tucker Kraft, like he's going to be able to get back into the mix early. Or a Micah Parsons, maybe, right? You're looking at being able to jump back into the mix early, have him ready for the home stretch. But that was something where he talked about. He feels like the guys will hold down the fort, if you will, for those first 4, 5, 6 games, however long. And one thing I'll say, I wish I had someone hype me up the way Micah Parsons hypes up Lucas Van Ness.
What, I don't do a good job, enough job for you?
You don't.
Really?
You don't.
I put a lot of effort in that, too.
You don't. I wish so. Like, even I think my parents booed me.
Well, I can understand from their perspective. I know you, so
it's horrible. Right?
That makes sense. But I hype you up all the time, Dominic. Nah, I don't know what you're talking about. No, Micah Parsons is still Lucas Van Ness's biggest fan.
It's unreal.
Are you buying the stock when he says, "I think that he's going to have I'm going to have my hands full of who's better, me or him"? Or he literally said that today, and I'm just like,
who's
okay.
The bigger favorite?
Look. Nah. I think Lucas Van Ness, when healthy last year, played much better. Mm-hmm. I thought the film was better than his second season. I think if he stays healthy, there's reason to believe that a former first-round pick is going to be a disruptor. He's a strong defender on the edge, sets a good edge. Mm-hmm. Had the sack in the playoff game, mm-hmm. right? Like, we saw things from Lucas Van Ness. He's not Micah Parsons.
No.
So, if you're looking for me to hype you up that much – you're not Micah Parsons either. I can't go to that level.
I just need a little more. I just need you when you
I'll give you more. I give you that much.
When you see me just... Are you getting taller?
Well, we know that now.
Is your hair growing? Can I just get a couple of those?
You still get haircuts. You know, that's something I gave up a few years ago.
I'm just giving a barber money for no reason at this point, as you always say. You're being friendly on the pod, but behind closed doors, you give me a hard time.
This is what happens. This is what happens when Spoon's not here with us, is that it's early June. We don't have Spoon to keep us in line. We're all over the place, yes. But this man still goes to the barber, and I give him a lot of credit.
Yes,
you
do.
If you want your hype.
Yes, you do. But as we kind of wrap up the state of the defense, I mean, there's a few guys that I'm curious about. You know, how can the young guys kind of mesh? Because, like you said, not only Van Ness, but he talked about Baron Sorrell and Colin Oliver, just so many guys in the mix, Javon Hargrave. So there's so many little things, and obviously we'll dive deeper into it in training camp, but the big theme from the locker room, which I want to include Xavier McKinney into the mix, this is like new ground for a lot of these guys in terms of where they're playing, where their spots are. So, again, it's very early, but I'm just kind of saying out loud, I'm curious on how it'll all come together because some of these guys are still going to be playing in new positions. So even bringing Mike into the mix will be fascinating.
I want you to talk more about the defense because, to be honest, just the way you go into any locker room availability with some ideas in mind, but then so much of it's dependent on who's in there and who's not and when they're in there and timing. And the way it's worked out is I spent a lot of time talking to the offense the past couple days, whereas we're walking out of the locker room, you're telling me some interesting things about Xavier McKinney, for example. I'm like, I didn't even barely talk to the defense other than Micah Parsons. So what stood out to you about the defense?
Yeah, so
outside Micah Parsons.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, he's still really good.
He's important. He is the defense. But outside of Micah Parsons, what has stood out to you there?
Yeah, so I was able to talk to a handful of guys. Xavier McKinney, he was one. I talked to Javon Hargrave, who was there, and Zaire Franklin. And with McKinney, I asked him what the process has been like. You know, he's a vet. He's a two-time pro, you know, all pro player. So what's it like jumping into this new defense? And he admitted that it's been a bit of a process trying to get the hang of it. He said he spent extra time in meetings, working with the coaches just to get a feel for it. And obviously the verbiage is different. But how he kind of explained it now, he's playing more middle of the field, like that middle safety.
True post,
where before it's like your strong safety with Evan Williams on the back.
It wasn't always a true post before. He was a post safety,
yes.
But there were times that Jeff Hafley liked to kind of they were multiple back there. Mm-hmm. Sometimes Avery McKinney was up more, and that stood out to me as very interesting, because if you look at Avery McKinney and Evan Williams, their strengths don't overlap
exactly
that much.
Exactly.
Like Evan Williams has an interception of the open OTA, his first open OTA last week, he had a pick. He can pick the ball away, mm-hmm. but if I'm a DC, I want Evan Williams near the line of scrimmage as much as possible. Mm-hmm. He will blow plays up. Mm-hmm. He did it all last season. I want Xavier McKinney being my center fielder in the deep middle and just don't throw there.
Yes.
Ever. And you saw a lot of that. I'm not, you know, it's not like they didn't do that. But those are the strengths of those two guys. They can do other things. Avery McKinney's got a sack last year. Mm-hmm. You know, I think each of the last 2 years he's had a sack. Evan Williams has interceptions. But you want your players in their strongest spots as much as possible and to accentuate each other. Xavier McKinney deep, Evan Williams in the box around the line of scrimmage as much as possible. That's a good way to do that.
Yeah, so that was his big takeaway. He's adjusting to that. He said he's gotten the hang of it now, which wouldn't surprise me. Again, Xavier McKinney, Evan Williams, Micah, high IQ players and really, really talented. So it didn't take him long to get the feel of it. But yeah, that's kind of – it's a new-ish position after a past couple of years, moving to the middle of the field and really making sure everyone's in place. And he's like, I'm really learning all sides of the safety position. So that was something big for him. And then guys like Javon Hargrave, Zaire Franklin, the thing for them, it's more of just bringing that veteran experience and that physicality. I mean, we talked about this, and even you asked Micah about some of that accountability, that leadership, because Micah said himself, people were too hard on the floor and the coaches. He's like, it's about the players on the field. It was an interesting take, right? So that was his mindset. So it seems like with guys like Hargrave, a veteran guy who's experienced in the middle, Zaire Franklin, he said, I'm here to create issues.
Do you agree with Parsons when he said that?
I wouldn't say 100%.
I wouldn't either.
It's a team. Everyone is a part of this. So it's like maybe, okay, LaFleur called a bad play or play calls were wrong, but – the penalties, it's two-sided to it, but it's not 100%
players. I asked him what was missing last year, and he said accountability, and then he pivoted directly, immediately, to player-led accountability and took all of that onus off of Matt LaFleur. And we talked about this immediately in the aftermath of Chicago, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, like, you're the head coach. All eyes in the building are on you, especially that locker room. All eyes in the locker room are on you. The accountability has to start from there because those are who the eyes are. That's who's being watched. That's the head coach, leader of the team. And it kind of goes downhill from there. But any head coach will tell you that the best teams are player-led accountable too. So I'm not 100% disagreeing with Mike Parsons either. I just thought it was very interesting where that is where Parsons' attention, his focus clearly is having that player-led accountability. And we shouldn't need the head coach for this. Like this is where it's interesting. I think having the accountability from the head coach certainly helps.
Yeah.
I think it's important. But I also do think that player-led leadership is also important.
Yeah, there's always more to it, right? So that's my biggest takeaway. But, yeah, I would never say it's 100. Because like you said, we came out of that Chicago game, and it's kind of like, man, they took the air out of the ball, like with the play calling. And so yeah, that's not a player. That's not an issue with, you know, that was like a Jordan Love thing. If it's like, well, Matt LaFleur called the jet sweep or the, you know, so there's so much more that kind of goes into it. So, yeah, it was a very fascinating a discussion from him, but maybe, I guess we'll see, maybe some of the veteran guys was what this team needed.
Doesn't hurt.
Right?
I don't think it hurt. If they can still –
if they can still go. Yeah.
Right? And I'm not saying that they can't. It's just at the end of the day, you say, oh, we brought these veterans in. We're better now. But production always is most important. Can you play? And the Packers certainly believe Javon Hargrave and Zaire Franklin can still play. But it starts there. But assuming that they're right and they can still produce at a high level, it sure doesn't hurt having more seasoned veterans in a locker room that for three straight years now has been the youngest in the NFL. Having a little bit more of that seasoning, it doesn't hurt in the late season stretch run, marquee primetime matchups where it's everything's riding on this.
Yeah, and that was their theme. It's like Zaire, he said, I'm kind of saying verbatim, not verbatim, but paraphrasing. He was like, yeah, you know, the verbiage is different, but I'm not learning how to play football. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm just learning where the bathrooms are here.
Right.
Like, I know how to play. I know what my strengths are. Like,
I can help him with that.
Yeah, right? You didn't help me with that when I got here.
No, I let you fend for yourself.
A year and a half
Maybe
ago.
That's the whole hype thing.
That's right.
Makes sense.
You're trying to make me better, make me do it on my own.
But you are you better now? Yes, you are.
Well, I don't know. The jury is still out. The jury is still out.
See, I'm trying to hype you up.
You tried. That's the issue. I'm not good at taking compliments anyways. So why would I even need you to hype me up? So, but, yeah, again, that's how we kind of just can put a ribbon on the defense, though. Like, you have some vets now. You have some talent. You have some experience. And X talked about it as well. The experience goes a long way. But at the end of the day, you got to put it all together. We're not going to learn anything after training camp or preseason, as we've said many times before. But I am curious in terms of how they'll have guys in position. And like I said, what would they do during that adversity?
You see Chris McClellan getting first team nose tackle reps
out there in OTA?
That'll be interesting.
Yeah.
You know, it's a tough adjustment in the trenches, especially for rookies, because now they're not in college anymore. They're going against grown men, mm-hmm. and that's a different kind of power. But I thought that was interesting early on. Well, I'm curious once camp begins where that kind of goes from there. It got my attention, but it's still a big development. But it's that to me stood out. I'll be very interested in that.
Yeah, that was something for me too, because this is the other thing about, for people that need to know, during OTA season, you're trying to figure out who the hell everyone is.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm out there on the field yesterday. I'm like, who is number 7?
That is still throwing me off.
Yeah. And then
it's not Quay Walker anymore.
Right. But then, so you mentioned 55.
Yeah.
I'm like, I thought Kingsley and Igbari was traded. And then it's like, oh, Chris McClellan, right?
He's a little bigger than Kingsley.
Yeah, I'm like, that's not JJ.
Yeah, no.
So, but yeah, that's the season right now, learning jerseys. But yeah, he was a guy that I saw out there in rotations. That was an observation, which is another one for me, offensive line. I'm curious, obviously, without Zach Tom right now, they're just kind of repping some guys. But it was fascinating to see Anthony Belton do some snaps at right tackle during drills. You saw Jagger Burton play right guard. You saw Sean Ryan at center, Aaron Banks at left guard, and Jordan Morgan. But and our colleague Pete Doherty even wrote about this, like that MVP maybe of the offensive line, a guy like Jagger Burton. Like he's doesn't need to be like a star as a rookie, but maybe he can kind of be there to provide some depth and maybe be an interior guy of the future. So that as a whole is something I was interested in. But just the O-line, I'm wondering how they'll mesh and how they'll work. And even a guy like Anthony Belton playing at tackle right now, I'm wondering how they will be able to grow from that. And because you want to stay versatile, but I'm still that guy of like, man, just let him stay on the position and let him work at it. So
Jagger Burton has the potential to be awfully important because they feel like he can be a center guard combo. It gives a lot of flexible depth inside that they did not have. I mean, for the one guy that they drafted from this draft class on offense, they might have covered multiple bases there. And we got to see how he obviously develops. But if they feel like he can do any of the three inside positions, that really helps. What is the underbelly of this interior offensive line is not a lot of depth.
Yeah.
It was one of the least depthful. I don't know how to say that. You know what I mean.
It made sense to me. I'm from Kentucky.
I'm from Indiana.
It
so
made sense.
Backup running back, obviously. I don't think we need to say anything more there. But that interior offensive line was an area where that underbelly is kind of soft. And
yeah.
If he can fill multiple spots there that and not just be a center – gives you options because Sean Ryan's going to be the center.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the Packers have good reason to believe that he can handle that spot really well. I think, you know, I was talking with Sean Ryan in the locker room at length as we were waiting for Micah Parsons to emerge. And what an incredibly, in his word, weird journey it's been for him as a guy who missed his entire rookie season basically because of the performance-enhancing drugs dust-up that at the time he still says was a miscommunication and not an intentional thing. Mm-hmm. As a guy who was a college tackle, now finds himself a starting center. As a guy who the Packers tried to bench last year, and it, really not just last year, best couple of years at right guard, tried to find a better solution, and then finally last November finds himself after the Elgton Jenkins injury at center, and suddenly your lack of speed, that what made him not an NFL tackle, is not near the liability at center. Your power is an even bigger strength. You're really that position more than any of the others on the offensive line. You're playing in a phone booth. It is mano a mano. It is guy right in front of you. Just overpower him. And Sean Ryan's pretty good at that.
Yeah.
The other thing, too, is if you're a center, you need to know all the spots. This is a college tackle who started at guard, who is now at center. He's literally played all the spots. So from a communication standpoint, Sean Ryan gets the offensive line in totality. That's going to be very helpful. So in this weird way, Sean Ryan was kind of had all the attributes, and he's gained through this journey all the attributes to be a center without it ever being the intent or the goal for him to be a center. And he did say that his college position coach back at UCLA, there was a practice when he just happened to say, you'd be a pretty good center in the NFL. And Sean Ryan, in the way that Sean Ryan speaks, which I, for one, as someone who appreciates a good cuss word, I definitely enjoy, he had some words to this coach that I can't repeat on a family podcast.
Thank you.
But it was very much in the no way will that ever happen type of vein. And he said that, you know, once he signed the 3-year, $33 million extension this spring, he thought back to that a lot of like, huh, guy must have saw something, right? Mm-hmm. I do think having this first full offseason now to really develop that position for him is going to be big. I asked Sean Ryan, like, what how have you used your time now that you know this is it? And you would think he's going against bigger guys, more powerful guys inside. I would think, like, bulk up. You got to really – that Sean Ryan doesn't need to do that. He already has that. Mm-hmm. He says actually the flexibility, being able to, you know, kind of protect his gap, get to spaces that the center needs to get to. Mm-hmm. That's what he's focused on the most at this new position, is that flexibility piece of it. So he's had that time now to really focus. This is your spot. He said, it's the first time in my career I've actually known in the offseason where I'm going to play. Like, he's never known that before. If the offensive line kind of starts from there, I think there's good reason to believe the center position's in good hands.
Yes. That was the big theme that I looked at, was just the interior as a whole. Being able to keep that group intact as beneficial, at least it could be very beneficial, because even last year, at the end of the season, you saw some moments where – Sean Ryan, Anthony Belton, even Aaron Banks, like, they were moving guys around, especially late in the season. I can't even remember the game now, went blank on it, where Josh Jacobs had his longest touchdown run, the
Broncos game. I'm glad you mentioned that game. They look good. This offensive line didn't look good most of last season. They actually did look good.
Had moments.
In Denver.
Yeah. And
against that defensive line.
Exactly. Had a 40-yard, broke his longest run of the season for, the group. So, like, if you can keep it together, you know, maybe you could have more of those games. It just hasn't been consistent. And now you got Jordan Morgan in spot right now at left tackle. Aaron Banks is healthy right now at left guard. So that's going to be the key. And we'll see how they kind of navigate things. And, again, I'm wondering about Belton and when they'll have him back in the mix.
Right? Jordan Morgan, if he wasn't under a microscope already, in this week – the least expected time ever. It's early June. You're just mind your own business. And now, Myles Garrett's with the Rams. That amplifies how important it is that Jordan Morgan plays like a first round left tackle.
Yeah.
Because it's not just any team. It's the team that you know you've got to probably go through them to get to where you want to go. I know that the Seahawks are the defending Super Bowl champions, and they're very good too. But I don't know. I was already leaning Rams when you start thinking 2026. The Rams are so confident they use their 13th overall pick on Ty Simpson.
Yeah.
They're building for the future. They feel like they got the pieces now. Oh, wait, they're getting Myles Garrett. My first thought, I don't know about you, my first thought was, okay, Jordan Morgan.
Yes.
It's time to, you want to own that position for a couple years now. That's going to be huge.
He's got to own it. I'll say Adam Stanovich, when we had the chance to talk to the coordinator, ask him about Jordan Morgan. He's like, he just got to own the position right now. So he said he wanted to play tackle. He has said he is a tackle. You have to own it. So I'm curious when they have the joint practice against Arizona. Is Arizona a juggernaut defensive line? No. Well, I guess they got Josh Sweat. And he will not be in Green Bay. That's what it sounds like. But I'm curious how he's going to just do. Will he, like you said, own that position? Because there were times last year during preseason where I was like, okay, he might be the guy. In Indianapolis, when he was at left tackle, I thought he did some good things. And then the injuries happened. They put Rashid Walker there, and they moved Jordan Morgan to the interior. So besides health being the biggest thing, I'm just wondering, will he own that position and say, yes, I am the left tackle? Because he's kind of the MVP, not the MVP, the big question for me. Like, if he has success, you should feel good and feel better about the offensive line, because the reason why I laugh after the Myles Garrett trade became official, some of his moments and clips started circulating on Twitter.
Yeah, I know
Twitter.
Exactly where you're going.
You know where I'm getting at.
Yeah.
Jordan, run.
Yep.
With Mr. Rashid.
Can't
Walker.
Be worse than that, can
yes,
it?
Yes, yes.
The guy that he's replacing literally got beat so bad by Myles Garrett week 3 last season in Cleveland that his only avenue to help protect Jordan Love as the blindside left tackle was to turn and say, Jordan, run. So if the guy you're replacing starting from that baseline, it is a low bar
yes.
that Jordan Morgan needs to clear. I think he will. I've said that I think Jordan Morgan is an upgrade at left tackle based on what Rashid Walker put on the field last year. Mm-hmm. I think that he has the flexibility. I know the short arms thing, but he's got the flexibility in his base. He's got the footwork. He's a really athletic guy.
Yeah.
So I think that this is a good thing. But as soon as that Myles Garrett trade happened, I'm like, well, that's really going to test that theory.
Yes.
Because he tests a lot of theories with Myles Garrett.
So my advice to Jordan Morgan, if you get beat, don't yell run.
Yell run. If you get beat, yell run. Okay? You'll take the social media ridicule to try to protect your quarterback in that situation. That's exactly what Rashid Walker should have done. He knows he was whipped.
Yeah.
Just tell the quarterback to run.
Yeah.
At least do that.
What would you do? Would you triple?
I'd let you get hit.
What would you do in
that
situation? Would you?
Yeah.
You let me take a shot?
Yeah. That's why I don't play for the Packers.
I know it. I mean, I laugh, but I can't even.
Well, that's not why I don't play. There's a million reasons I don't play for the Packers. Let's be very clear there, but that's one of them.
You see, I just glossed over that comment.
Yeah. It rang in my head. I'm like, no.
I'm just going to keep it moving.
Don't have an NFL body.
But
that's
like,
a big reason.
Yeah, I laugh. Rashid, like in that situation, but I know Myles Garrett could have walked up to me, just took his hand, pushed it on me, and I fall. So, I laugh, but I wouldn't even be close to having any type of success. I would have just like laid on the ground, and at least if he had to jump over me, at least it would take him longer to get to Jordan. I don't know what I would have done in that situation. But
there's nothing you can do. You scream, Jordan, run.
Jordan, run.
That's all you can do.
And then go back to the sideline and cry. I said, Coach, I'm sorry. Seriously, I'd be like, Coach, I tried. I would have been.
He's Myles Garrett.
I would have been released the next day. I'm like, Coach, I tried, man.
This isn't a practice squad guy. It's a different dude.
It is, like you said, even Micah. Micah is the most confident man you'll ever meet. But he's like, Myles Garrett, he's the one guy. I'm like,
he's not wrong.
Yeah, he's got me beat. So as we start to wrap things up here, I do have like two more things that I want to touch on. I want to start with Marshawn Lloyd, and then we can jump into the receivers. So this is a guy, let me take a step back and say, what a 2 years in the NFL. What a time to start your career. You have a lot of confidence. You're feeling great. You're drafted by an organization like this in the Green Bay Packers. And in 2 years, you have had one healthy week. Rookie year. In week 2 against Indianapolis, And even then, at the end of the game, you hurt your ankle. You didn't even finish that game. So.
On a really impressive run to the wide side, if I remember.
Yeah. Right.
It's been a while.
Yeah. So it's like, I couldn't imagine what it's like. You feel like you're coming back, and then you get hurt. You feel like you're coming back, and then you get hurt. You feel like you're coming back. Then your appendix ruptures. Like, seriously. And then you have a preseason game also in Indy, and you make a great run, and you get injured, and he just has yet to get back on the field. He spent a lot of time learning his body and learning the mechanics, and he feels like he's healthier and feeling better than he's ever been. But I will give him the credit that he has appears like he's handled this really well. And you also have had the chance to talk to him and hear from him. You know, just what have you learned about Lloyd in this process and just kind of what he shared through it all?
Well, the good news is they're not playing the Colts this year. Preseason, regular season, they're not on the schedule. That's very good for Marshawn. Because whatever it is going against the Colts, it's not good for him. I think my mind starts here. You know who does not need to be reminded? The last person needs to be reminded that Marshawn Lloyd's only played 10 NFL snaps in two seasons? Marshawn Lloyd. Like, he's the one that's lived through this. And I was mentioned to him, like, this isn't how you want to be remembered. He's like, exactly.
Right.
Like, he didn't get all the way to the point where he was drafted third round of the 2024 NFL draft to become a punchline. Mm-hmm. That's not what you want. The injuries, the physical toll that it takes, the need to figure out how to stay healthy, that's all hard enough. But to me, it's the mental side of going through all this that he's gone through. And there's been multiple times where Marshawn Lloyd has really believed, I'm back.
Mm-hmm.
I'm good now. And then he wasn't. So now he feels like he's back. He's good now. And he has to believe he is. He has to somehow find way to trust the body that got him to this point, but now continues to betray him. And that's not an easy thing when you're trying to play football. Like, there's a mental hurdle there that I think is going to be very significant, to go along with the fact that his injuries have been so significant. He spent the entire offseason, all of spring, late winter, as soon as the season ended, to OTA, to offseason program time at the Myers Institute in Southern California. Just, he's like, I love my family. I miss my family. My family understood. I can't see you right now. I got to go figure this out. And so he feels like he has, but it's just that mental side, man. That's not easy. And so he's the anyone that, you know, even for guys like us that are completely detached from the outcome of a game or a season, you can't help but hope that Marshawn Lloyd figures it out, because you don't want to see anyone go through that. That he has been through a lot with this. I don't know if he will or not. I'd be lying to you if I looked you in the eye and said, yeah, he's back. I have no idea. But you hope that he can at least stay on the field. You hope anyone can stay on the field.
Well, it's selfishly too. Like, as a guy that enjoys watching good football players, mm-hmm. I am so intrigued by what he can do. I want to see it.
He's a shifty guy. He had a he caught a little check down
mm-hmm.
in 3 yards past the line of scrimmage in the box during OTAs, and they're not wearing pads. And I almost by rule of law, I don't evaluate running backs
right
in June because it's not football. But he caught this pass. I think it might have been Tyron Hopper that was like right behind him, and he did. He put a spin move on him. It was downfield like quicker than a blink, and you're like, "Oh, that looks good." I mean, that's exactly, he has the quick twitch and kind of the scat back quality that you want to pair with Josh Jacobs.
Mm-hmm.
He can do that. That's a good compliment. It is why the Packers let Emmanuel Wilson go sign somewhere else. They want Marshawn Lloyd to be that guy, but there's also a huge gamble in that he might not be able to be a guy if he doesn't stay on the field, right? So you see the vision for him there on how he can be used. But as Matt LaFleur said, and as everyone that knows this game says, the greatest ability is availability.
Yeah.
And he hasn't had it.
Yeah. So I want to roll his comments about when we ask him about this stuff, and he just said, I know I got to prove it. So it's time for me to do that.
I don't know if you're on social media, if you're out there. Do you hear that fans are like, man, we can't wait to see this guy? Like, do you see that?
I try to stay away from it, but my family, my girlfriend, my girlfriend's family, my mother, my sisters, like everyone, they do look at that stuff. But me, I just kind of just try to. I do see some people that text me personally on like social media or something. They'll say, you know, good things, and I do see some bad things as well. But it comes with it, and I'm excited. I'm excited to, you know, prove the ones that are excited right, and then prove the ones that are not excited. I'm gonna prove them wrong.
What's that like? You don't want to be known for this.
Yes, exactly.
Right? And right now, that's what you're known for. Yes, like, what is that like to kind of go through that?
Honestly, I can't do anything until I make it happen. Like Coach LaFleur said, prove it. I mean, if I want to change that narrative, prove it.
I'll also say, personally, I mean, I don't know what nights are like when he's at home by himself or whatever with his family or his girlfriend. I give him props. Anytime we've asked him for interviews, he said yes. You talked to him 2 days in a row since we've been here. He's always smiling. He's always positive. He's always appreciative of the time. So, you know what I mean? We're going to see what happens when he gets on that field and can he stay healthy, right? But even fans will message and email, ask me, like, what about Marshawn Lloyd? Like, what can he do? I'm like, I don't want to stick my foot in my mouth just because you haven't seen it yet in 2 years. But I just watch him in practice. I watch him in drills. I watch him with the ball. I'm like, man, he's shifty. I laugh because I was just shooting video of the running backs doing just drills, just doing bag drills and things of that nature. And, you know, I'm watching Josh, basic speed, Pierre Strong. I'm watching all these Damian Martinez. And I go back to where the running back drill starts, and Marshawn Lloyd already went past me. I missed him completely. And I was like, just because he goes, like he moves. And people have seen the videos that we've shared on social media. He has that gear that, again, the Packers don't have right now.
That's tough to do. You don't miss anything with your camera.
Right.
That's tough to do. See, that's more hype.
Hey, thanks, man. You're so good. All right, let's wrap this up because people are just going to not enjoy this bro pod that we're having right now.
Who doesn't like a good bro pod? It's 2026. Come on. Who doesn't like a bro pod?
It's bro pod, and we're having senioritis as it's almost summertime.
Oh, that's true.
Yes.
I am 2 weeks from vacation. When I say vacation, I mean like vacation. It can't come soon enough.
I know it. I can't even stop thinking about it. But let's wrap it up, though. I do want to touch on the receivers because that's one group. It is interesting because when we've talked, and even like other people within the media and fans have talked about the state of this team, there's just those couple of positions where no one's really questioning, at least not me. And I have the receivers up there. Yeah, we're curious about what the O-line might do or – you know, the depth at running back and, you know, some other pieces. But that receiver group, it's the one group that I never imagined I would call it an upgrade, even though they cut two quality players. But when you talk to Jaden Reed, you talk to Matthew Golden, you talk to Christian Watson, they are all, even right now, they're all in that mindset. They know what their roles are. Like, they're defined, and they know what they need to do to have success next year or this coming season. And, I mean, they know it's coming, and now they just have to do it, and especially Matthew Golden. He's going to be one of those guys. A lot of eyes are going to be on him. There's a few players that I think they might have the most eyes. Trace Mack might be number one. Matthew Golden might be number two.
5-9.
Yeah. Are you going to jump into that?
It was a windy day.
It was. You can see it. You can see the crosswinds or whatever.
It was legitimately very windy.
Yeah.
But for a fan base that has been traumatized by the kicking game, I don't know that 5-9, the first time you see a guy kick against an actual rush, is what this fan base needed to see. Now, people freak out. It is what it is. It's June, and it was very windy. I wrote a story about this. It's the wind that'll get you. Like, he's going to have to figure out that wind.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not so much the cold, it's just this is a very windy place. It's windy in August, it's windy in September, it's windy in December. It's always windy.
Yeah.
And it's going to take him some time. Now, you would hope that by September, he figures out the wind. That's going to be significant. It's crucial. But I'm not going to make too much out of a 5-9 on June 1st.
No.
but or June 7th, I don't know what.
Whatever.
I'm almost on vacation.
You're right. That is a good point.
But still, 5-9 is not what you want.
That is a good point, and you know we didn't have the chance to talk to him, but you mentioned the wind because there were some kicks that we saw where it's like he just straight hooked it. And I'm like, oh my God. But so I'm wondering if that was just a young guy trying to get a feel for the wind.
I think
wind.
It was.
It's like, okay, do I kick it this hard? Maybe not.
Well, he's going to have to kick way? Different. Like, yes. I wrote an entire story on it.
Exactly.
And it's not his mechanics that'll be different, but he's going to have to lean that hold, the football, the nose further downfield, plant closer, and have a lower
low
trajectory.
Straight.
You got to mm-hmm. kick it under the wind.
Low and straight.
And he's going to have to learn how to do that. So, like, he's a very talented leg. I'm not surprised that early on in his time here, he went 5-9 in a practice.
Right.
Because he has to – that we knew that. He has to learn how to deal with this win, and it's going to take time.
Yeah.
If he can't make that adjustment, that's when it's a problem. It's not a problem in early June.
Right. So that was my big thing that I thought, and at least from the mechanics. I even saw you got your stopwatch out. You saw it was the 1.30 because the goal is at 1.28. Yeah, so
they're right on it.
He was close on the kick. So, but that was just my big thought that he was just trying to feel the mechanics. Like, okay, how do I kick and win? So that's the process.
Receiver,
let's wrap.
You
it up
haven't there. You haven't heard questions on receiver because I've heard questions. I don't understand the question. I don't agree with the questions, but I've heard questions on the depth, and I don't agree. If Christian Watson and Jaden Reed, and maybe even Matthew Golden for good boot. If they're injured, then your passing game's going to struggle. Well, duh. Like, that's what they are top of the depth chart receivers. Give me an offense in this league that you have your top two or three receivers miss substantial time that's not going to be effective. You think the Rams missing Davante Adams and Puka Nacua are not going to struggle? Like, of course that's going to happen.
Right.
That doesn't mean that they are not – that they're lacking depth because on paper they're going into training camp five deep. Mm. You know, you got the top three. You got Savion Williams who can do a bit of everything.
Yeah.
We don't know if he can play, like, just pure receiver. He's not going to need to play a lot of pure receiver in this offense. Like, he fills a role that doesn't overlap with Christian Watson and Jaden Reed and Matthew Golden. And then you've got Bo Melton, who is back at full-time receiver. Sure makes sense to me. We didn't see him at corner. So
right.
It's easy to say he's a better receiver than corner. We didn't see him at corner. But he's made plenty of plays. He had two long catches in the open OTAs this week. And I'm not making too much out of a couple long catches in June, but I've seen him draw a really crucial pass interference in the 2023 NFC Divisional Round game in San Francisco. Like, this guy as a number five receiver, they're just fine there.
Mm-hmm.
He's not – there's no, Bo Melton's not the guy that you want carrying the water on offense any given week, but there's not a number five receiver in the NFL that you want carrying the water on offense any given week. That's the reality of why depth charts exist. They are a hierarchy. Your number one's not the same as a number five. So that it doesn't strike me as, oh, they struggle for depth there. They sure want them to stay healthy, their best guys to stay healthy. But there is, to me, an addition by subtraction element to Romeo Doubs and Dontavian Wicks are good receivers. They've had too many for too long. And I wondered how the guys that remain would handle that. When I asked them this week, they kind of said the quiet part out loud. Like, Jaden Reed's like, we've known for years they can't pay all of us.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, Jaden Reed just got the extension, right? The 3-year, $50 million extension. They picked Jaden Reed because he's a playmaker in the slot and he helps the offense stay on schedule down and distance. Like, they picked him. They knew but for the longest time, he didn't know if he's going to pick, if Brian Gutekunst is going to pick him, Romeo Doubs, Dontavian. Like, they knew they can't pay everyone. They knew there's one football in a ton of potential targets to go around. And as Matthew Golden said, as Jaden Reed said, those targets are going to go somewhere.
Yeah.
Now they're going to go to them more, right? And no one, to me, stands to benefit more than Matthew Golden, who the path has now been clear for him to not lack for targets. He's going to be on the field. He showed us in the OTAs. I asked, he caught that crosser and took it to the house. I was like, hey, if they're tackling you there, they got the pads on, you still taking it to the house? He's like, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe him because he's got special speed. Mm-hmm. You put him in the open field, get the ball in his hands, he can take it there from anywhere. Now they have two of those guys.
Yeah.
Christian Watson does the same thing. I think that they're just fine there, unless they get injured. But guess what? Having more depth than five is not – they would have been in trouble anyway.
Yeah, that's just kind of my thing. Like, it would be a freak situation. I mean – almost,
it happened last year.
I'm sure these fans know the Packers have had bad luck with injuries. But, I mean, if you're going to think of Christian Watson and Jaden Reed and Matthew Golden, plus, I mean, people can't forget Tucker Kraft is coming back in this passing offense. So, it's like you're going to have him. Maybe, you know, you're still going to have Luke Musgrave. He's still a guy out there that has some skill set. A skill set in this passing offense Matt LaFleur loves. Jordan Love still likes to find him the ball. So, I'm like, I get that they love to have a lot of guys. But if you can rock with the group that you have right now and allow Matthew Golden to get into a consistent rhythm, I just think, again, the sky's the limit for these guys if he's going to have more I will always think of Chicago in the playoffs. Find a way to get him the ball. I'm always going to go back to that moment when it's like, how much can you use Matthew Golden? Because you know what you get with Watson and Reed. Then you have Golden back into that mix. I just, addition by subtraction.
I told Jaden Reed point blank how I have thought of this. And I gave him the option to tell me if I'm wrong. Mm-hmm. Okay, and that was the question. If I'm wrong, yeah. But I said, for the longest time, I've seen this offense as there's a lot of really good receivers that won football, and it's really hard to accommodate all of that. Now I see this offense, this passing game, and I know what everyone does. I can visualize it. Like, Christian Watson's the X. Matthew Golden's the other perimeter. You're in the slot. Tucker Kraft's underneath. Luke Musgrave stretching the seam. Like, that all makes sense to me.
Yeah.
Am I wrong? And he's like, no, I can see why you would think that. Mm-hmm. Now, and he added, and he's right, we still have to go out there and execute it that way.
Mm-hmm.
But I can see why you think that.
Yeah.
Like, it all just makes sense now in a way that was too cluttered before. And I think that is where the decision that Brian Gutekunst had to make. Would you rather be really loaded up at depth and really cluttered? Or would you like to declutter the passing game and be more susceptible? Like, they don't go 7-8 deep now. But be more susceptible to injuries that might happen. But if you stay healthy, you have guys in the same roles throughout the course of the year. You're building continuity. Your best, most explosive playmakers are getting the ball more. Like, which would you rather have, the depth or more targets for your best explosive players? And I think that they were right to choose the path that is getting Christian Watson, Tucker Kraft, Matthew Golden, and Jaden Reed more targets.
Yes. I think the game that sums up the receiver room last year to me was Dallas when Jordan chucked that ball up and Wicks and Golden were next to each other. It's like, who catches the ball?
Yeah.
That summed up the receiver room for me last year.
That's a great point.
So now that everyone is in their spots, like I said, it just helps. It's just more beneficial to all of them. Because like you said, a Matthew Golden can just come in knowing his role, knowing what he needs to do, and go do it. Instead of, hold on, am I in or is Wicks in? Or, hold on, are they putting Malik Heath in?
You're throwing to me or you're throwing it to Wicks?
Or is it Bo Melton? Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, who is who? Too much musical chairs. So now, like you said, you got two perimeter guys. You got your slot, your tight end. Again, it just would make more sense.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, Matt LaFleur or Jordan Love, those guys would never admit this, but I just feel like it would be a little easier. It's like, all right, I know it's about the matchups, but it's like, oh, yeah, we got a great matchup for Christian Watson here. Let's dial that up.
I'm glad you mentioned Jordan Love because I should add this. I asked Jordan Love, are you at a point now where you got to enter game weeks thinking, hey, for us to be our best offense, Christian's got to get this many targets. Tucker's got to get this many targets. Spoiler, I think they are. Because it's 3 years now they've had something of the same core. And not everyone develops at the same rate. Not everyone develops to the same heights. Over the course of those 3 years, some guys have reached different heights than others. Tucker Kraft, Christian Watson, the best example. I think they are. And Jordan's, this is how he plays the position, he said, you know, I'm just going to take what the defense gives me and play the play out. And there's good reason for that. You don't want to force it. I get it. And no one's advocating for going back to the days of Devontae Adams getting 13 targets every week and it still not being enough in Aaron Rodgers' mind. Like, no one's advocating for that. But, yeah, Tucker Kraft, probably needs 8 to 10 targets every single week. Christian Watson needs his 8 to 10 targets every single week to be your most explosive self. I think that that might be an adjustment for Jordan Love because he hasn't operated in that mindset at that position. It's been egalitarian. It's been spread it out evenly, play it out. But at a certain point, like, you gotta find Tucker in this spot. You gotta find Christian Watson in this spot. Like, there's an adjustment period there.
Yeah, that's something that really stands out to me. And I mean, you can tell this is Matt LaFleur's guy with Jordan Love, because I mean that's LaFleur's thing. Take what the defense gives him. So, but it's going to be fascinating because I couldn't imagine Jordan Love has to be more confident than ever. He played well last year. It's so fascinating with Jordan Love in terms of the outside perspective. Not everyone, but some of the people that I don't know, I guess they still don't think this guy is good. And I'm still one of those guys that I'm like, you just don't watch football. Mm-hmm. And this is, you know, we just mentioned it. It's unbiased. We're not fans. We don't care. But like,
he's a top 10 quarterback.
This guy is good, right?
You know, Caleb Williams, Dak Prescott, those guys, you know, Justin Herbert, like who's better? That's, you're splitting hairs there. Yeah. It gets really hard. But he's a bona fide top 10 quarterback.
Yes, no question about it. Yes, is there, I don't want to say a gap, but yeah, there's Josh Allen, Mahomes, Lamar, like those MVP guys. But then it's not like Jordan Love is that far off.
He's tier two behind those guys.
He's exactly. So, but again, now that he's more comfortable, more in the role, I am wondering, like, how much he's going to really understand defenses and try to expose those matchups. And now he'll have less options to choose from, but less options, but good options. So I'm wondering how he'll spread the rock and get guys involved. So, yeah. But, hey, this is June. There's a lot to talk about in June.
There's a lot to talk about.
So I guess this team is the gift that keeps on giving.
We haven't even talked about the Luke Combs concert. Like, two podcasts have passed now. We haven't even talked about that. He was at Bruno Mars.
I was.
Ask him where that concert was.
Yeah, Soldier Field.
Yeah.
Chicago.
Yeah, so he was at Bruno Mars. I was at Luke Combs. Both great concerts. We haven't even got to that. It's been too much football.
I know it. That is so true. So, but, hey, it was a 12 out of 10 show. And
same for Luke.
Right. But that was the thing. Like, we were texting during the show. Well, before the show, because when it was showtime. Don't talk to me. I'm losing my voice screaming. So that is true. I will say this, and I'm not going to ramble too much about the Bruno Mars show, but it's pretty cool, the fact, like, you have no idea how much karaoke I've sung from that guy. I mean, how many times have I been in your car?
That's what I told you. It's one thing, like, to have the music that's in your ear, in your earbuds while you're mowing the yard, to be able to be at that guy's concert. It was a good time.
Yeah, so it was a good time. So two good shows, and yeah, I guess here I was in enemy territory at Soldier Field, but it's a great place to see a show.
And
I know Lambeau is too.
Terrible place to watch a football game, but I bet it's a great. Man, Soldier Field, FedEx Field, like, there's not a lot of places in the league that are, you know, worse than those two spots. But
it's true.
You know, it's smaller. It's a bowl. I bet it's a nice concert venue.
Yeah, nighttime it was really good. So, hey, man, this is this is where we're at in summer. We're enjoying concerts. We're thinking about
vacation's almost here.
Vacation, you know, got to meet up with the families and not think about football, and then an unplug.
And then winter is coming.
Yeah. Yes, it is. So.
Winter is coming.
Yes, it is. So, hey, we're going to wrap things up. So they'll have, mandatory minicamp next week on the 11th and 12th, I believe.
That's
correct. And then they'll wrap things up. And even a side note, because I'm not sure if we'll have another podcast for a couple of weeks, maybe. We'll have to wait and see. But Evan Williams, he's also expected to speak at the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel Sports Awards. So, again, we're going to be catching up with some of these Packers, but they're also going to disappear and get out of town. And I am too. So, we're going to get some serious sun, some serious Indiana, Kentucky sun. And
yes,
we're going to enjoy it. So, hey, good stuff. And Ryan, always appreciate it. And thank you for your insights and
everyone. Keep doing what you're doing. I'm gonna hype you up more.
Hype me up, please.
I got you.
Please,
yeah.
Do
keep
it.
Doing what you're doing.
Please do it again. Just ask me if I'm getting taller. You know.
Well, you're not.
And is my hair growing?
Nor
and...
is Lucas Van Ness Micah Parsons, but you know.
That, yeah. I swear that's gonna be my thing. Get someone to hype me up like Micah does. Lucas Van Ness, because Just as a side note, because I remember we joked, you know, we were able to watch your oldest son graduate, get promoted.
Yep.
From eighth grade, and you know,
high schooler, have a high schooler.
High schooler, and we were cheering, and we're like, "Woo, let's go, buddy!" And then I joked after, because your parents were like, "Yeah, did they cheer for you when you graduated?" I said, "No, yeah, my parents booed at me. They said no, boo this guy, boo this man." Like, thanks, mom and dad. So
this is why I love your parents.
That's right. But your kid, he got a good reception. So hey, again, it's one step to summer. So we're looking forward to that. So hey, everyone, thank you all so much for checking out the Green 19 podcast. For Ryan Wood, I'm Dominique Yates.